From the Carnegie Tsinghua Center in Beijing, China, this is the China in the World podcast, hosted by Paul Hanley.
Welcome back to the China in the World podcast. Today we're going to be talking about North Korea. Momentum on denuclearization talks between the U.S. and North Korea has stalled as the two sides have come to an impasse in the negotiations. But the new year has seen a renewed focus on North Korea, began with a New Year's address by North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Next, Kim Jong-un successfully completed his fourth trip to China, where he met with Chinese President Xi Jinping. And now there are rumblings that Kim Jong-un will meet with President Donald Trump for a second summit. And once again, Kim Jong-un might meet with South Korean President Moon Jae-in. There's also speculation that President Xi Jinping will visit Pyongyang in the next few months. Here to talk about these fast-moving developments, and particularly China's role in these developments, is one of our own Carnegie Tsinghua scholars and frequent China and the World podcast guests, Professor Tong Zhao. Tong Zhao is a fellow in Carnegie's nuclear policy program, and he's based here at the Carnegie Tsinghua Center in Beijing. Tong Zhao was previously a Stanton Nuclear Security Fellow with the Managing the Atom Project and the International Security Program at the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at Harvard University. We've been fortunate to have Tong Zhao join us a number of times on this podcast over the past 2 years, most notably as significant developments take place regarding North Korea. We met and discussed North Korea on the podcast during discussions in the fall of 2017 at the height of the North Korean missile and nuclear test period and during the era of fire and fury. We also met on the podcast this past spring, directly following the historic Panmunjom summit and first in-person meeting between South Korean President Moon and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. And we're delighted to have Tong Zhao back with us again this week after another unexpected visit by Kim Jong-un to Beijing and ahead of a possible second Trump-Kim summit. So let's begin, if I could, Tong Zhao, with this year's New Year's address by Kim Jong-un. Many of our listeners will recall last year's address celebrated the completion of North Korea's nuclear weapons program, during which he mentioned the nuclear button that was on his desk. I think we all remember President Trump's response to that, having a bigger nuclear button on his desk. But Kim Jong-un also opened the door to the possibility of participating in the South Korean Winter Olympics, which North Korea did end up going to and participating in. And his speech last year foreshadowed an unprecedented year of North Korean diplomacy and engagement with the world. Just earlier this month, Kim Jong-un gave his 2019 New Year's address. And I wanted to get a sense from you, what in his speech was significant? What were your takeaways? What surprised you? What didn't surprise you?
Well, on the key issue of North Korea's nuclear program, he made a statement about not making, testing, using, and proliferating nuclear weapons. There is some real ambiguity about what this means, especially when he talks about not making nuclear weapons. Does that mean North Korea wouldn't make additional nuclear weapons, which would be an indication of a willingness to freeze its nuclear program? But that sort of contradicts with its New Year's speech 1 year ago, the 2018 New Year's speech. Kim Jong-un ordered his countrymen to mass produce nuclear weapons and missiles. And he also said this commitment of not making testing, using, and proliferating nuclear weapons in the past sense. He referred to it as a previous commitment he has already made. So if we understand his saying correctly, North Korea had been mass producing nuclear weapons and missiles since the beginning of last year and stopped somewhere in the middle and then started to refrain from making more. But in either case, I think that's where we can explore further with North Korea in future negotiations. Try to substantiate those North Korean commitments. I think those are meaningful steps, but again, still far from completely dismantling North Korea's existing capabilities. And on the other hand, North Korean leader in the speech made it very clear again that he's very serious about the so-called new strategic line of focusing on economic development. I think there's little doubt that North Korea wants to quickly grow their economy, improving the people's living standard. That's the best way for a North Korean leader to sustain his role, his governance of the country in the long run. So I don't think we should doubt that sincerity at all. But he also kind of threatened at the end of statement, saying if the U.S. does not cooperate, if the United States does not provide corresponding measures, North Korea may find a new way to achieve its superior national interests. I don't think he's threatening to going back to testing nuclear weapons, testing long-range missiles. I think that era is bygone. North Korea still has a strong incentive to continue the charm offensive towards the broader international community. Even if the United States did not cooperate, I think North Korea will still refrain from the most provocative activities. But he might lean closer towards Americans' most important long-term rival or competitor, China. That wouldn't be good news for the United States. So we can, I think there's a lot to play out among the three key players in this coming year, China, North Korea, and the United States.
Thank you for that. Very helpful. With regard to this commitment to refrain from manufacturing additional nuclear weapons and material, of course, as you alluded to, the Trump administration and the international community has had as its goal to get North Korea to completely abandon its nuclear program, including the weapons that it has now and the nuclear material that it has now. It's unclear what commitments the North Korean leader made to President Trump at the Singapore summit in this regard. It seems to me this is the biggest shortfall that came out of Singapore was very ambiguous, unclear commitments by the North Koreans. But nevertheless, we're also hearing reports since the Singapore summit that North Korea continues to build new missiles and continues to develop additional nuclear weapons grade material for the nuclear program. And so this commitment that it would refrain from manufacturing additional nuclear weapons, one, it seems to there seems to be a disconnect with what the U.S. and others, the expectation has been for North Korea. And second, it seems to not reflect the reality of what's happening in North Korea. What's your sense of, number one, what Kim Jong-un has committed to, would be willing to commit to in the area of denuclearization? And do you agree with these reports that the North Koreans, even though they're not testing nuclear missiles, they're not testing additional nuclear devices, that they continue to build their inventory of missiles and nuclear material?
Yeah, according to some open source research at a missile deployment site that is actually located close to North Korea's border with China, there was sign, if we analyze the satellite image of that site, that North Korea has continued to build and improve that missile site as recently as in last year, 2018, during and after the Singapore summit. And that site, according to the physical features, it appears to be perfectly suitable for deploying the North Korean newly tested ICBMs. And at the Yongbyon nuclear complex, most of the facilities are very well maintained. And this past winter, when there was snowfall, and afterwards, if we look at the satellite image again, we saw that the snow on the roof of the centrifuge facility was quickly gone, meaning the facility is maybe still operating, if not at full capacity, but still it could be running continuously and producing.
This is the highly enriched uranium facility, right, not the plutonium production factory.
No, but all the important facilities within the Yongbyon complex are very well maintained.
Mm-hmm.
So it is still possible North Korea is continuing generating additional fissile materials. Again, in addition to this known facility at Yongbyon, North Korea reportedly has other secret enrichment facilities. The status of those, the operational status of those facilities is uncertain. So it is very likely that North Korea continues consolidating its nuclear deterrent capability throughout last year and maybe continuing till today. So there is uncertainty about what Kim Jong-un committed to when he said not making nuclear weapons. There is this theory that by making nuclear weapons, he was simply referring to not designing or trying to improve the design of the nuclear device rather than not manufacturing additional nuclear weapons. I think that's possible. If that's the case, then his rhetorical statement is consistent with what is going on the ground, meaning North Korea is not greatly improving the quality, the design of the nuclear warhead, but could be still increasing or enlarging the nuclear warhead stockpile. But in either case, I think there is a real chance we can push North Korea further to freeze its nuclear and missile programs as soon as possible.
And so the way you describe it, when President Trump says the nuclear problem with North Korea is solved, we can be pretty certain that that is not the case, that North Korea worked very hard to get, as you've described in some of your writings, a minimum level of nuclear deterrence. And you've also suggested one potential scenario is that Kim Jong-un will desperately try to hold on at least to that minimum level of deterrence capability, to keep the capability that it currently has, some of those missiles, some of that nuclear material, as a security guarantee for North Korea, and that it may not be in North Korea's intentions, at least at this point, to give that up. And perhaps he's racing to build that arsenal up to a point and thinks that he ultimately can keep it. But in any case, we still continue to deal with a nuclear program, and the North Korea nuclear problem is not nearly over, as President Trump indicates.
I totally agree. Every sign that I have seen from North Korea doesn't convince me that North Korea is prepared to completely give up its nuclear weapons. It has published stamps for its ICBMs, and North Korea hasn't published stamps for the Kim Trump summit, which is a historical event. So that shows how important the ICBMs are for North Koreans. And of course, they have built memorials at the testing site of the ICBMs to commemorate those historical achievements. North Korea has gone such long ways to hide technical information about their previous nuclear tests, the composition of their nuclear weapons, the design of their nuclear weapon. That shows they don't want to undermine their nuclear deterrent capability in any way possible. That's not a gesture for a country that is really open to, you know, quickly giving up its nuclear weapons. That shows a strategy to keep them for the long-term future. So, you know, there is this recent discussion that in the upcoming Trump-Kim summit, they might reach some interim deal in which North Korea might give up some ICBMs, etc. I don't think those are highly likely. I think for North Korea, it really needs to keep a robust nuclear capability, including warheads and ICBMs, to threaten the United States as a credible deterrent. I wouldn't see them being willing to give them up in the foreseeable future. So we have to work under that premise.
Since the Singapore summit, Secretary of State Pompeo has gone to North Korea, made zero progress on the issue of denuclearization. The second trip where he was scheduled to go, President Trump and Secretary of State Pompeo canceled the visit before because they knew or anticipated they were going to make zero progress. They've hired an additional envoy working under Secretary of State Pompeo, a very capable individual by the name of Steve Biegun, who was in the Bush National Security Council and has considerable experience, very capable. But with Secretary of State Pompeo not being able to make progress, I think it makes Mr. Biegun's job that much tougher. What is your sense on what the U.S. side is running into? Why are they not able to make progress? Why are they not able to have these negotiations on the nuclear issue? You know, it seems to me part of the problem was that the commitments that Kim Jong-un made at Singapore summit were not very clear on the issue. But I'd be interested in your perspective as a non-American on, you know, what it is that the American side, the resistance that they're running into.
I think the fundamental problem is North Korea cannot trust any security guarantee from the United States. It is extremely difficult to make security guarantee irreversible. So North Korea feels they have to secure their own, secure their regime by depending on their own nuclear deterrent. I think that's the fundamental barrier. In recent meetings I attended with senior North Korean officials, they were simply reluctant to discuss what security guarantee they want from the United States and what kind of peace regime they envision for the Korean Peninsula under which they can give up their nuclear weapons. So if they are willing to make some grand bargain with the United States, giving up nuclear weapons for security guarantee, for peace regime, they should be very extremely interested in knowing what U.S. can offer and is willing to offer. But they showed little interest in discussing those issues. That convinced me that they just cannot trust such reversible security guarantee. So that makes me believe will be a long-term process to build basic trust, to fundamentally transform North Korea-U.S. relationship from a hostile one to a friendly one. That would be the precondition for North Korea to seriously consider giving up their nuclear weapons. So today we may have to consider more limited and more realistic objective, which is to freeze the program, restrain the program, limit its scale and scope, shape North Korea's thinking about nuclear weapons, prevent North Korea from adopting really risky and destabilizing nuclear postures, making North Korea unlikely to use its nuclear weapons. I think those are priorities and are more likely to achieve.
Let's talk a little bit about China, North Korea. China is often labeled as North Korea's closest ally. But if you look at the relationship just over a year ago, one Chinese scholar told me recently that a year ago, last fall, 2017, the relationship between China and North Korea was at its lowest point in history. And I remember an episode you and I did where we discussed possible Chinese red lines. Were the North Koreans approaching Chinese red lines through some of their actions and due to the frequency and instability of North Korean nuclear and missile tests? And we had a great conversations regarding the kind of things that North Korea might do in terms of next steps, and those were coming dangerously close to crossing Chinese red lines. Today, we're in a very different place. And, you know, we just, as I mentioned at the outset, Kim Jong-un was just here again in China. He's met with the Chinese president several times over the last year plus. And I wanted to get a sense from you. How do you evaluate the state of the relationship today between China and North Korea? Is there more trust? Or are both leaders just using the other to achieve their own objectives with regard to third parties, in particular the United States? Or is there more to it? And what role has the U.S. had in influencing the China-North Korea relationship?
From a scholarly perspective, I don't think there is any real trust between Chinese and North Korean leaders. They didn't talk with each other for years until last year. So I think they were simply behaving in a way to best advance their respective national interests. It's a mutually beneficial relationship. It's a relationship of convenience rather than mutual trust. I think for North Korea, it really wants to deal with the United States because the U.S. is the one that keeps the UN economic sanctions from being lifted. So U.S. holds the key for North Korea's new ambition to grow their economy. And U.S. still is a very important factor that affects North Korea's security in the future. So dealing with the United States is a top priority for North Korea. North Korea wants to build a long-term strategic relationship with the United States. On the other hand, I think North Korea also understands in order to get the most from the United States, North Korea needs a close relationship with China. Especially for the foreseeable future, the U.S.-China bilateral competition is only going to grow. So that's where North Korea will invest to make the most out of this strategic rivalry between the two big powers in this region. That's how North Korea can create the largest breathing space, breathing room for itself. But now with the fourth China-North Korea summit, it looks like North Korea is building a closer relationship with China than with, much closer relationship with China than with the United States. And the North Korea-China relationship is even closer than inter-Korean relationship to some extent. That contradicts a rational strategy of playing off the two big powers against each other that also contradicts North Korea's long-standing position that its foreign policy is independent, its, you know, self-determination, not to be overly dependent on either party. I think one explanation for those is North Korea now really needs China's support because there is barrier for progress in the U.S.-North Korea bilateral negotiations. The U.S. is not compromising, it's digging in on its position, and North Korea is not really confident that it can force United States into more concessions, and therefore it doesn't mind showing to the world that it closely consults China, really respects China, even putting itself in a lower position, looking upon China. So I think that shows that how much a challenge we are countering in the U.S.-North Korea bilateral negotiation.
We talked just a minute ago that Kim Jong-un traveled to China recently to meet with President Xi Jinping. This was his fourth meeting with President Xi in 10 months. So they've had quite a bit of interaction over the past 10 months. As with past visits, this one was not announced. It was, in fact, Kim Jong-un's birthday when he traveled here. But it also was on the same day, he arrived on the same day that the U.S. negotiating team on the trade and economic issues arrived and began negotiations with the Chinese side. And there's some speculation that the timing was chosen to coincide, to show the American side that China has some bargaining chips on its side. I'd be interested in your view on that. But more generally as well, just what do you see as the objectives of this visit this time? And how did the U.S. fit into the calculations about this meeting, if at all?
I'm not sure all those pre-planned to coincide with his birthday, to coincide with the U.S.-China trade negotiation in Beijing. We shouldn't read too much into those. You know, every day has some important significance. Someone's mm-hmm. birthday, some summit is taking place somewhere, some high-level diplomacy is happening somewhere, some historical events happened on this day. And it is not convenient time for China. China's today's the top priority is to resolve the trade dispute with the United States that is really having a major impact on Chinese economy. And China wants to resolve this, but having Kim Jong-un in town is not helpful because if you have Kim Jong-un in town, from the Chinese perspective, China has to treat him well. China has to even promise greater cooperation with North Korea, which might even include greater economic and trading cooperation. That wouldn't make China look good to the United States and wouldn't
just
help.
Just because there has to be something that comes out of the meeting?
Right.
Just some pressure for some sort of deliverable to the North Koreans?
I think China will have that pressure. Kim Jong-un himself traveled all the way to Beijing, spent his birthday here. I think China feels the pressure that it has to give North Korea something back. So it's not time for China to pressure North Korea to even tighten the economic sanctions against North Korea. It's the opposite. So China, I think, is actually in a difficult position between U.S. and North Korea. The U.S. wants China to put more pressure, and China feels it actually has to give North Korea more.
So if the timing was difficult, why would the Chinese side be open then to hosting him?
So I think it's probably a North Korean initiative. And Kim Jong-un said, according to a North Korean state media report, he really appreciated President Xi Jinping taking the time from his very busy schedule to meet with him. So again, I think...
And the reason that Kim Jong-un would want a meeting now, does it have to do with the fact that there will be a summit soon and a meeting between Kim Jong-un and President Trump, and Kim Jong-un feels the need to show the American side that it has China at its back? Is there an element that Kim Jong-un wants to check in on strategy with President Xi? I mean, what would be driving then if Kim Jong-un knows that President Xi is busy? It might not be the best time from President Xi's standpoint for a meeting. Why then would President Kim Jong-un feel the urgency to press for this meeting this time?
I think it's probably connected to the upcoming Trump-Kim summit. And North Korea feels that U.S. is not backing down, insisting on real concessions on the nuclear issue from North Korea, which North Korea is now ready to offer. So this is different from the first summit. This time, Kim Jong-un might feel this meeting might not be as successful as in Singapore. So to put pressure on the United States, North Korea needs this visit to China to show the United States that even if you do not back down from your position, even if you continue all the coercive pressure on us, we can still fare well. We can still have greater and greater Chinese support, even though we might slow down our economic growth, but we'll be fine. We won't face any imminent economic crisis. We'll just take longer time to build our economy, so we can't afford that outcome. So it's you'd better, be more flexible if we meet somewhere in the near term future. So I think that's a signal that helps North Korea to gain bargaining leverage in the upcoming summit. It's a signal to Washington. Of course, its visit also makes China feel good. You know, North Korea
consulting.
Yeah, it's consulting. You know, China emphasizes strategic coordination between the two countries. So it also helps the Chinese leader feel good. So I think it's achieves a lot for the North Korean leader.
Lastly, on the upcoming Trump and Kim summit, we've seen reports that the preparatory talks between the U.S. and North Korea for this second summit are now moving ahead. There was a pause for a period, but they're now moving ahead. Reports over the past few days indicate that Trump has delivered a letter to Kim Jong-un in Pyongyang over this past weekend, and that Kim Jong-un's representative, Kim Yong-chol, will be in D.C. soon to meet with Secretary of State Pompeo. Thinking about the second summit, one of the outcomes of the recent Kim and Xi meeting was that President Xi expressed support for another Trump-Kim summit. So Beijing supports the idea of a second summit. Wanted to get your sense, why is it Beijing supports that? And how did it view the first summit? I will say that many Chinese counterparts here in Beijing have said to me, seems to us that the outcome of the Singapore summit was the dual freeze proposal that the Chinese had on the table for a long time. And if that's the case, I would imagine the Chinese are delighted at the outcome of the Singapore summit. But what's your sense on these questions?
Yeah, I agree. The Chinese thinking makes some sense, which is for such a difficult relationship to be transformed, for trust to be built, it really takes time, and we have to do it incrementally. I think that makes sense. However, there is a disagreement or different view between me and maybe some other Chinese experts on the ultimate possibility of complete denuclearization of North Korea in the near-term future. I have to say it was my personal assessment that Kim Jong-un is unlikely to disarm soon. But many Chinese experts indeed believe there is a good chance that this can happen, especially if the United States is equally willing to offer real security guarantee to North Korea, and to put real efforts into improving bilateral relationship with North Korea. I think that's why China supports another meeting. There's a real hope that some significant progress can be made. I heard many Chinese scholars commented that the first meeting was more symbolic, but that's okay because that's the first meeting. But more, you know, the substantive negotiation would happen on the second meeting. I'm very skeptical, but that's a sense you can feel from talking with many Chinese experts. So, but that's the real danger, because if no radical progress is made on the second summit, I think China will blame the United States for not being sincere in offering real security guarantee and being flexible enough to accommodate North Korea's demand. So the gap between US and China on this issue will be widened. And in that environment, if the Korean Peninsula's security situation worsens in the future, if North Korea keeps its nuclear capabilities, China might even attribute that unfortunate outcome to insincerity of Washington. And some might even accuse the United States of deliberately not resolving this crisis. So that will only plant seeds for greater strategic distrust and competition between US and China.
And what would the goal of the US be for deliberately not trying to resolve this issue?
Well, there is this longstanding belief among quarters of Chinese security community that the US has always known that North Korea developed nuclear weapons simply for regime's survival purposes. North Korea would never threaten the United States without being seriously provoked with nuclear weapons. And the US knows there is no real threat from North Korea, but it's simply keeping the crisis from escalating into the war, but keeping it ongoing so the US can have an excuse to continue strengthening its security alliance network in this region, including being able to deploy more advanced military assets around China.
That the ultimate aim really is China, but using a North Korea, North Korea nuclear program as an excuse for building up U.S.
Yes, that's the deep suspicion among many Chinese experts in the security community, and I think this will play out very soon as the United States might release its new missile defense review report. And I think when preparing this report, the premise in the mind of American strategists is that North Korea will keep its nuclear weapons in the foreseeable future. So they, as a result, will continue push for more missile defense deployment in this region, including on the territories of their allies. And that will not play well at all in the mind of Chinese experts. So there will be growing dispute over missile defense, over Japan obtaining long-range offensive capabilities against North Korea, etc. All those measures taken by U.S. and its allies to counter the North Korean threat will be interpreted by China as directly against, as a veiled effort to contain China.
Looking at the agenda then for the Singapore summit, what do you think, how do you think the agenda, what will it look like between the two sides, and where will this issue, you know, given that after the Singapore summit, U.S.-North Korea negotiations, you know, have stalled, they haven't gone anywhere on the question of denuclearization, where will that fit into the agenda in your mind for the second summit?
it looks like the second summit might happen. If so, I imagine the outcome is more likely to be, again, symbolic than substantive. As people today are already talking about interim agreement rather than a complete roadmap that that decides on the ultimate outcome of complete denuclearization. So North Korea might offer to put a number of additional facilities on the table, freezing them or even dismantling them, etc. And the US might agree to continue engaging following the summit. So I think this would be, we are still at the early stage of a long process. And both parties will continue bargaining very hard. Progress can be made, but sometimes we might see the reverse. So it will be a very bumpy road going forward.
And from what I've been reading, it seems that the U.S. side has proposed that Presidents Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un would meet in Hanoi. Do you have predictions over where this might occur? And I know I've heard that you have some views on why Hanoi might make sense.
Yes, there are some media speculation about Hanoi being the place. I think that makes some sense. Vietnam has good relations with both the United States and North Korea. Vietnam is located not too distant from North Korea, making the logistical arrangement for the summit relatively easy for the North Koreans. And more importantly, Vietnam had this history of initially being hostile, having a very hostile relationship with the United States. Fought a war similar like North Korea, fought a war with United States, but successfully transformed its relationship with North Korea to a very friendly one. And and Vietnam also transformed from a very isolated country to a more much open one, much well connected to the rest of international community, with a very robust economy with great economic potential going forward. I think that symbol of Vietnam being, having the opportunity to have a different relationship with the United States and be more open to the outside world, I think that symbol is important to both North Korea and the United States.
Well, thank you very much, Tung Zhao, for joining the China in the World podcast. We'll have plenty more to talk about as we go forward, as we approach the second summit between Kim and Trump, and hope we can convince you to come back onto the podcast and explain to the readers, listeners, some of your thinking on these important topics.
Well, thank you so much for having me again.
Thank you. Thank you for joining the China in the World podcast. Be sure to check out more content from the Carnegie Tsinghua Center on our website.